We're currently faced with a crisis in Christianity, a life and death struggle between orthodoxy and heresy, between the kingdom of Christ and the kingdom of the cults.
The Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff, talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The prosperity gospel, it's nothing short of a wholesale transformation of Christianity. It's the glory of the cross supplanted by the glory of consumerism. It's a fast food Christianity. It's long on looks, but it is dreadfully short on substance.
You can meet and hear Hank Hanegraaff at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. You'll find a conference schedule, and you can register at issuesetc.org. Don't miss the premier conference for Christian laity, the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Planned Parenthood said that they want to help the communities, especially the black community, even though their founder, Margaret Sanger, said, and I'm paraphrasing them just a little bit, colored people are like weeds, they need to be exterminated.
When we hold to the good, godly distinctions between men and women in Scripture, it should be no surprise to us that in the same way that preaching the Word of God clearly makes us isolated from all the rest of the world.
The one who forgave you all your sins with his blood, he is not abandoning you to the grave. No, he's not going to forget you. He's made you his own.
I'm Vicky.
And I'm Ron from Ontario, Canada.
Confessional Lutherans who play in German polka bands, love issues, etc.
I think it's fair to say that the response, the actual kind of conservative pro-natural marriage response to Masterpiece Cake Shop v. Colorado Commission on Civil Rights has been, well, all over the place. It has been very happy, elated response. It has been cautiously optimistic. Just this morning, I read Andrew McCarthy responding to the editors of National Review. I would characterize his response as cautiously pessimistic. So what kind of a Supreme Court decision gets that variety of responses from people who were rooting for Masterpiece Cake Shop in the Supreme Court case that came before them? They heard, and then they issued a 7-2 decision that people are saying, well, maybe the majority, that kind of majority doesn't reflect the strength of their decision or perhaps any implications it may have for similar cases. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 7th of June. Terry Mattingly will join us to talk about media coverage of the Supreme Court's decision in Masterpiece Cake Shop v. Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Then Scott Klusendorf will be alongside. There's a new book out by a Christian ethicist, Rebecca Todd Peters. She's arguing that women ought to be trusted to make the decision of abortion because they are free moral agents and because we cannot assume that abortion is morally wrong. She doesn't really even assume that the unborn child is a full human being. She'll say, of course, it's a human being, but not in the same sense as the mother. We'll get Scott Klusendorf's response to some of that. Then in hour two of Issues Etc., we'll be looking forward to Sunday morning. According to the 3-year lectionary, we'll be looking at the gospel reading in Mark chapter 3, where Jesus talks about the blasphemy against the Holy Spirit and who are his true mother and brothers. Dr. Carl Fikencher of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be our guest. Feel free to join us with questions or comments. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, our Twitter address at issuesetc, and the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about media coverage of the Supreme Court's decision in Masterpiece Cake Shop, Terry Mattingly. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
So why the variety, and this really running the gamut from elation to as of this morning, Andrew McCarthy saying he's kind of pessimistic about this decision. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's better than nothing. Could be kind of summarize his response to the National Review editors. Why the variety of responses?
Well, first of all, this is such an emotional topic. And there was so much attention given to the oral arguments for this case. And there are so many deeply felt emotions on both sides that the tendency to say, to shout wolf and, you know, and to shout that this is the end of the world, both sides have motivations to say that. For one thing, it's really great for fundraising, right? On both the left and the right. But the other thing is the main reason that people don't know what this case means in the long run is that basically the court punted. I mean, it moved right up to the edge of the decision everybody needed, which was to define the limitations on religious liberty or define the grounds under which religious liberty defenses can be offered when charged with improper discrimination as opposed to proper discrimination, and there is proper discrimination allowed in American law. I mean, so it's a vague reading, and at several points, I can actually read you a couple of the phrases here in a while. Justice Kennedy, our king and sovereign ruler of America, Justice Kennedy actually says at several points, we're going to need guidelines. And then crickets. No sound at all. I mean, just no suggestion what those guidelines might be. So before we get to the press thing, I've actually kind of prepared your typical TMAT typology to sum up, you know, all of the stuff I've read. I've got them in four camps. Let's see if this resembles sort of what you're thinking. You ready?
Sure.
Okay, camp number one. This was a dodged bullet, nothing more. In other words, game continues. But we didn't lose this one. And we're looking at this from the religious liberty, First Amendment liberal side of the question. Dodged a bullet, nothing settled. Now, then there's an optimistic camp. And this is interesting. I think it was David French, the great religious liberty figure and lawyer who writes for National Review. I believe it was David French who observed that people who actually do litigation in these cases are more excited than the people who are looking at it just as abstract law. And the hint is people who actually are boots on the ground on this issue, they know that in many of these cases, there are emails, there are letters, there are public statements of animus against religion in these cases. I've heard people say that within 24 hours of the decision, you had people refiling in some of the cases of religious groups on college campuses that are being kicked off for wanting to have, you know, their leaders actually believe the tenets of their organization. That's a radical concept. To where you have people already refiling their briefs, citing this and quoting at length from angry and prejudiced letters by college officials and stuff. In other words, they think that just being able to demonstrate anger, animus, and negative prejudice, that card alone actually affects a lot of these cases, which is certainly an interesting way to think about it. Then camp number three, this is the kind of cautiously optimistic, yet also cautiously negative folks, kind of the realists in the middle. These are the people that say at least it's positive that Kennedy said there could be guidelines under which religious liberty is a proper defense. We just don't know what they are now. And saying that there can be some and that there are valid ways to defend religious liberty, while he also then completely affirmed same-sex marriage, you know, and the other side's key doctrines as well. The fact that he even said there can be guidelines is positive. We just don't know what they are yet. And we don't know who will be on the court when that comes up again. In other words, this group, this is the real middle ground. These are the people who believe we could end up with something resembling the old RFRA Religious Freedom Restoration Act guidelines for when it is possible to make a religious liberty defense case. It doesn't guarantee you that you win. RFRA never guaranteed that anybody would win one of these cases. It just said, here are the grounds under which you might argue. So with that in mind, let's listen to a collection of rhetoric. Two quotes from the decision by Kennedy. Our society has come to the recognition that gay persons and gay couples cannot be treated as social outcasts or as inferior in dignity and worth. The word dignity is the huge word for Kennedy. For the reason and laws and the Constitution, and in some cases must protect them in exercise of their civil rights. Notice, must protect them in some cases, some instances. Here's the word some again, S-O-M-E. At the same time, the religious and philosophical objections to gay marriage are protected views and in some instances, protected forms of expression. So he put the word some instances on both the left and the right. That simply means there must be guidelines at some point, either legislative that are then upheld by the court or struck down, or maybe even some hints from the court itself. Later on, he said, the outcome of cases like this in other circumstances, meaning circumstances other than those hatred phrases from the Colorado Commission on Civil Rights, the outcome of cases like this in other circumstances must await further elaboration in the courts. And in the context of recognizing that these disputes must be resolved with tolerance, without undue disrespect to sincere religious beliefs, and without subjecting gay persons to indignities when they seek goods and services in an open market. Now, the problem so far is that indignity is totally have been in the eye of the beholder, which means anything that happens that you don't like constitutes a violation of your dignity, and we have no guidelines to know when that crosses over into prejudice against religion. I mean, he's calling for tolerance, but at some points people are going to have to define how we will tolerate religious liberty in this new legal era, and it all comes back to that question you and I have discussed so many times. Under what grounds may you plead for something that resembles a conscientious objection to the law of the land? One more. You have another totally negative crowd, which basically says, oh yeah, this was actually a loss. All Kennedy did was tell lawyers on the left and civil authorities on the left, be nice. You can do whatever you want to defend gay rights, you can do whatever you want to put down religious liberty, just don't use nasty language. Be nice. That's how some people are interpreting it. So we have four different camps there. Now, how do those line up with yours?
Well, fairly well. I mean, I'm kind of looking at the barometer there. When we come back from this break, we're going to discuss, well, two questions. I saw one media outlet, and this was one that was in favor of the decision, but cautiously pessimistic, say that this is Anthony Kennedy trying to have his cake and eat it too. No pun intended, the metaphor intended, of course. We'll see what Terry thinks about that and how the media coverage has helped us understand what the case really was, what it was about, and what it may mean in the future.
What we need to know about Islam is that it's the world's fastest growing religion and the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel.
Hank Canagraph of the Bible Answer Man talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The current narrative is that if you tell the truth in this regard, well, you'll radicalize Muslims. But that's pure propaganda. What we need to do is wake up to the truth concerning Islam.
You can meet and hear Hank Canagraph making the case against Islam at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Church music directors can find a new community at Prelude to Postlude, the CPH music blog. Learn helpful tips for managing music ministry and involving members, and meet the composers of some of your favorite new pieces. Plus, find suggestions of music to use for special services, and preview some of our newest works with free samples you can use at your church. Visit us at preludetopostlude.org.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about media coverage of the Supreme Court decision in Masterpiece Cake Shop, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Terry Mattingly is our guest, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. So, Terry, how do you think the media has done since the decision, well, before and then since the decision, in basically informing the public what the case was about and what the decision itself means for the future?
Well, the big problem remains the same, and that is that there are media people who still don't understand that there are two different ways of using the word discrimination in this case. And of course, the court noted that there was a dispute about what actually happened when the two men walked in and what Jack Phillips said or didn't say. In other words, the two sides don't agree. But the Phillips position in law and in legal documents has been, I never turn anyone away from my store, and I offered to sell them anything that was already in my store for weddings. Any existing wedding cakes, any standard wedding cakes, anything they wanted to take, cookies, brownies, whatever they wanted for their reception, they were free to take anything that was in my store. I'd be glad to deal with them and help them. What I wouldn't do was create one of my special handmade artistic cakes that contains specific information about them or their wedding or the rite itself. In other words, he objected to same-sex marriage and did not want to take part in a religious rite. Now, under RFRA days, that would be a very strong case. You and I have discussed this before, but for listeners who are hearing this for the first time, let me note, you know, one of the classic examples concerned in Native American culture, the issue of whether they would have a right to use a drug that under normal circumstances would be considered verboten or just illegal, and that would be peyote. And the court ruled that they could use peyote only in very specific religious rituals that were tied to a traditional form of faith. This was not something they just dreamed up. No one had just created the first church of peyote and decided, I've got a religious liberty right to use it. This was something that had existed for centuries. It was in doctrine. And the Native Americans were not requesting a general exemption allowing them to use peyote whenever the heck they wanted to. That's the key. They were not asking for some broad exception. They were asking for a very narrow exception linked to a specific religious ritual backed by doctrine in the traditions of their faith. So with that in mind, Jacques Phillips is not saying, I want the ability to ignore gay customers, to push them back out my door and refuse to do business with them. I'm not looking for broad discrimination rights. I know that same-sex marriage, and I know that gay rights is now a part of our legal landscape. Just like the Indians were saying, we know peyote is illegal. We're not fighting that. We're asking to get to use it in a very narrowly defined circumstance. Thus, Jack Phillips says, I want to do business with everybody. I want to treat everybody with dignity when they walk in my store, but I want a narrow defined exemption from creating content linked to marriage, because marriage is for me a sacred issue, and I cannot allow my talents and my art to be used in the same-sex marriage. So that distinction between broad discrimination and incredibly narrow, religiously defined, doctrinally defined, even history defined exceptions. That's still, when you pick up a story on this case to read it, the first thing you have to read is, did the reporters understand that distinction? Or are they still writing the phrase, Jack Phillips wanted the right to discriminate against gays and lesbians, period? That remains the key fact that people have to find out if that's in the coverage.
Where I have seen it most often is in kind of the way the headlines on this are being written. Whether or not they use the word discrimination, what they say is Supreme Court finds in favor of baker's right not to bake. And here's where it gets tricky. If it says a wedding cake, or the headline says not to bake a cake for gay customers, that difference between a cake.
Well, that's not even specific enough, because he offered them all the existing wedding cakes in his shop. So he offered them wedding cakes. He asked not to have to make a wedding cake that made an expression with intellectual content. Do you get the distinction?
Oh, yes.
I mean, now that makes for an awfully bulky headline, doesn't it? I mean, but that is a crucial exception. They could have walked out that day with a big wedding cake from him. They could have put their own gay marriage topper on top of it. They could have gotten someone else to write their names on it with some sort of icing script, you know, machine or tool. He offered them wedding cakes. He asked, can I decline to make one of my artistic statement cakes? Now, the other thing is, you frequently will hear people say, well, why does he just want to treat gays and lesbians this way? Well, as the court found, actually, there's a lot of different kinds of cakes he refuses to make. He refuses to make cakes for bachelor parties. He refuses to make Halloween cakes. He refuses to make cakes that express atheist messages. He refuses to make cakes that attack gays and lesbians. He's been asked to do those, and he refuses those. There's a wide range of messages that he declines to put into wedding cakes. Is that fact in the story you're reading? Is maybe the second question to ask.
Back to kind of the analysis of this, what do you make of, I think I've read this several places, the characterization of Anthony Kennedy's role in this, of wanting to have his cake and eat it too. He wants Obergefell, which he is the architect, but he also wants to kind of mitigate the obvious consequences of Obergefell.
Well, no, you've got half the equation there, right? I mean, this guy believes that the defense of gay rights is his legacy issue. However, the other issue in his long history on the court, the other issue for which he is justifiably famous, is the defense of First Amendment freedom of expression rights, and a lack of compelled speech. This is a man who has been very liberal in every sense of the word in defining what is free speech and allowing free speech. So what we have here is a head-on collision between the two defining issues of the career of Justice Kennedy. Now, can you understand why he's not in a rush to try to settle that? And in fact, maybe he will find a way to punt on this and even retire without having had to violate his own legacy of First Amendment defense, while at the same time being able to take his strong stand in defense of gay rights. These are the two Tony Kennedy issues. So yeah, I can certainly understand his ambivalence or fear of trying to lean one way or the other. Either way, he loses a part of his legacy.
So more than ever before, Molly Hemingway's characterization of this is Anthony Kennedy's America and we're just living in it is true today.
It's true today, and so we still live in a confused America on this issue because at this moment, Anthony Kennedy either is confused or he knows what he wants to do. He just can't get the courage to push the button.
I have a question here. It would really help if reporters could actually interview Supreme Court justices about these things. Can you tell me why there's kind of a velvet curtain between the press and the justices themselves so often?
Well, it's just tradition, but the main thing is they don't want to be saying things in a public sphere that would later be read to them in court and said, oh, by the way, Mr. or Miss Justice, you said the following 2 years ago in a speech at blah, 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 or in an interview with 60 Minutes. Would you like to recuse yourself from the case now? I mean, even before smartphones were walking around, justices have always been very, very careful. A funny case, a number of years ago, well, way over a decade now, I was covering an event in Washington, D.C., where the speaker was one of the sons of the late Antonin Scalia. And this particular young man, now I guess middle-aged, is a Catholic priest and a very articulate Catholic priest. And he was up speaking, and in the middle of it, he just really began to tee off on a number of different issues that were in front of the court. And he spoke very bluntly, and even at one point kind of laughed and said, Dad and I talk about this all the time or something. And then he looked down and he sees me sitting in like the second row with a tape recorder and a notebook. And I hadn't interviewed him yet. We had an interview set up for afterwards. He looked down and saw me. And then with this very serious look on his face, he said, nothing that I am saying here today comes from the mouth of my father, Justice Antonin Scalia. Just made it really clear. I am not quoting my father. And that was exactly the problem. He didn't want anything to make it into public record that could be read back to his dad, literally during arguments at the Supreme Court, and say, well, Mr. Justice, is that still your belief? Yeah, these people are cautious.
Okay, and I understand that. Real quickly, if you had an opportunity to ask a couple questions of Anthony Kennedy right now, as a reporter on this case, what would you ask him?
I would read him the guidelines in RFRA and ask if he thinks those guidelines are acceptable in this day and age. Guidelines that passed in the U.S. Senate with only three dissenting voices and were embraced by everyone from Pat Robertson to the ACLU. Now, we all know they couldn't pass today by the same margin. But read him case law on those guidelines and say, Mr. Justice, what do you think of those today?
What kind of follow-up stories should reporters be working on right now about Masterpiece Cake Shop?
Well, first of all, they've got to find out if there really are people out there rewriting briefs to quote this case, and if so, how are they citing it? let's say you are in an intervarsity case where you're being thrown off a campus and you're sitting on stacks of letters and emails from government officials and school officials that express prejudice against religion. Are you refiling those things? And at that point, the fact that it's a 7-2 decision, 7-2 matters if you're dealing with a case in which there are clear expressions of hatred or animus. At that point, the math is significant because that's the only thing they said clear. So in some ways, people should follow up on what David French was talking about. They should find out what are the cases that religious liberty defenders are sitting on. What are they about to send to the court next in which they believe they have clear evidence that fits at least the hatred and animus test that's clearly put with the 7-2 vote in this case.
Terry, with about 30 seconds, I have the privilege tomorrow of actually interviewing Jack Phillips of Masterpiece Cake Shop. What questions should I put before him?
Is he going to start baking cakes again? And number two, will he prepare some form of written document, perhaps with the help of lawyers at Alliance or Beckett or somewhere, that actually say, this is what I do and this is why I do it here. This is what I believe. I would say, are you going to start baking specialty cakes again?
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate in the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, I'll talk with you next week.
Glad to be here.
Speaking of matters legal, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June is written by Craig Parton, an attorney in Santa Barbara, California, and a world-class Christian apologist. The book is called Religion on Trial, Cross-Examining Religious Truth Claims. You can have it by calling Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. The book is called Religion on Trial, Cross-Examining Religious Truth Claims by Issues Etc. Regular guest, Craig Parton. When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Scott Klusendorf. There is a book out by Rebecca Todd Peters, a Christian ethicist. She's making pro-choice arguments based upon, well, she says, let's not assume that abortion is an immoral act. And let's not assume that the unborn are human beings in the same way that the woman is a human being. We'll see what Scott has to say about that after this.
What does it mean to be a man? More importantly, what does it mean to be a man of God? In its June issue, The Lutheran Witness aims to help readers dig more deeply into the Bible's vision of men set free. Free to be loving husbands, caring fathers, bold proclaimers of the gospel, and self-sacrificial images of Jesus Christ. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.
This is Pastor Clint Poppy, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Nebraska, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Each month we host the Nebraska Lutherans for Confessional Study, a serious study of Lutheran theology. We generally meet on the fourth Thursday of each month from 9:30 to 2:30, and both clergy and laity are invited. There is no charge to attend. For more information, please call the church office or visit our website, goodshepherdlincoln.org, and click on the green NLCS tab.
Thanks to generous supporters, tuition for all incoming residential pastoral ministry and deaconess students at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be paid in full. Hi, this is Dr. Lawrence Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary. Learn more about studying for the vocations of pastor or deaconess in the 2018-19 academic year at ctsfw.edu.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, Ad Crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift-buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADC, RUCEM.com.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.